We do have an amazing array of communication methods at our disposal in society now. I mean, think about it. We still have the ability to send letters through the mail or call people on the phone, but then add email and texting and social media, and it's bewildering. And yet we seem to have trouble saying two simple words.
I'm sorry, so sorry.
Brenda Lee singing I'm Sorry in 1960. Writers Dub Allbritton and Ronnie Self clearly knew how to apologize, but that may be a lost art today, or at least a diminished one. The Language of Public Apology is the subtitle of a book by Rogue Valley resident Edwin Battistella, who's a language teacher and author, and his book Sorry About That is now out in paperback. Ed is a teacher of linguistics and writing at Southern Oregon University, has also written some other books, including Bad Language and Do You Make These Mistakes in English? Ed, welcome back to the Jefferson Exchange.
Thanks for having me. It's always great to be on with you.
It's a rich vein of material, I'm thinking, and probably the gift that keeps on giving. I was asking if there are differences in the paperback edition. Sounds like you've got new apologies.
I did. We added about 10 new apologies. We have Brian Williams. We've got Hillary Clinton talking about the email issue. We've got Pope Francis and Pope Benedict talking about the church sex scandals. And General David Petraeus makes an appearance. So several new ones.
Does it seem like of the public apologies that they are more or less easily generated when they're apologizing for an institution or themselves? Which one seems to be the one that's slower in coming?
Yeah, that's interesting. The sort of national ones or institutional ones are often slower in coming because there's so much internal debate. People, they have to sort of weigh the consequences, how it's going to affect an institution. And there's always a bit of back and forth between different factions about whether they should actually apologize. There's often a discussion about who's got the standing to apologize. So if SOU did something wrong, I wouldn't have the standing to apologize for it. And then there's often this issue of whether what's this going to mean in the future? Are there going to be reparations involved? Would other apologies need to be forthcoming? So it's a long process. But when it's done, the apologies are often much more eloquent because there's been this discussion and debate and thinking about it for so long.
Was it 50 years, 60 years after the Japanese internment that there was finally an apology from the federal government?
Yeah, it started in the 70s, actually, with Gerald Ford. And then Jimmy Carter appointed a commission. Ronald Reagan signed the actual paperwork. And George H.W. Bush and Bill Clinton wrote the 20-some thousand apology letters that went out to people who are still alive.
So there was a sort of an institutional apology, but then there were individual letters as well.
There were individual letters, and it's interesting because the letters from George H.W. Bush and Bill Clinton have a much different tone to them, and I'd encourage people to take a look at those because they really sort of reflect the personalities of the apologizers.
Since this is such a rich vein, and you mentioned coming in about 10 new things in the paperback edition of the book out this year versus the one we talked to you about 2 years ago, it seems like there's a constant culling of stuff. I mean, this easily could have been a couple of volumes, would be my guess.
I know. I was thinking about doing an encyclopedia of apologies or something. But, there are new things all the time. So I'm always getting kind of new ideas about how things work. And I noticed a few in the news just last week or in the last couple of weeks. There was Ruth Bader Ginsburg said she regretted making comments about one of the presidential candidates that were unflattering. And she didn't actually apologize to the candidate, but she sort of apologized to the public for doing something that was kind of out of policy for a Supreme Court justice.
Yeah, it was interesting to have her comment in the first place on a presidential campaign, which is part of the reason a lot of people landed on her, like, hey, Supreme Court justices shouldn't do this.
But I didn't know they shouldn't. I thought they had the same options as anyone else. But
well, and with everything getting politicized in today's world, you have to wonder about that. Is there a difference? I know you approach this not as a psychologist, a sociologist, but as a linguist. So, I mean, is there a large difference between "I'm sorry" and "I regret my actions"?
There is. I think if you say you're sorry, well, the strongest way to do this is actually just to say "I apologize for denting your car or whatever, and I'll fix it." But if you say you're sorry, you're sort of reporting your mental state.
Mm-hmm.
And your regret is, it's much more of a sort of diplomatic, it's kind of a diplomatic calculus. So if you think about the sort of just ordinary correspondence that we have, you might say, you know, "I'm sorry for your loss," or "I'm sorry things didn't work out." But if someone doesn't get a job or something is turned down, you know, "I regret to inform you." So regret is much more sort of institutional and impersonal, and sorry sort of reports on how you feel.
But you have to reference what it is you're saying sorry for, as you point out. And I've been hearing this since I had kids in elementary school, and it was, you know, the teachers are like, "You say what you're sorry for."
Yeah.
And you can't just say sorry. You have to say "I'm sorry for."
Right, exactly. And we were over at one of the restaurants a few months ago, and there was a little kid throwing stones at the tables outside, and one of them sort of skittered by our table, and his mother, I didn't even notice it, but his mother sort of did, and she, you know, pulled him over by the ear and said, "Say you're sorry," and he sort of kicked his feet on the ground and looked down and said, "I'm sorry," and then she twisted his ear a little bit and said, "Do it right, and say you're sorry for what you did," and so he did a better job the second time.
All right, we'll talk about the elements of apologies, correct apologies, as we come back to the program. As we go to the break, Buck Cherry with one of many, many, many songs we could find called "Sorry." So here we go.
And when I see you cry, it makes me want to die. I'm sorry I'm bad, I'm sorry I'm Bill, I'm sorry about all the things I said to you, and I know I love how you kiss, I love all your sounds, and baby, the way you make my world go round, and I just wanted to say I'm sorry. Is it too late now to say sorry? 'Cause I'm missing more than just your body.
Well, what would a Jefferson Exchange be without Justin Bieber music? But there we are, Justin Bieber, one of many people who has made a song called either "Sorry" or "I'm Sorry" or some variation of that, which leads us back into our discussion with Ed Battistella, a Southern Oregon University professor, about his book, "Sorry About That, The Language of Public Apology," now out in paperback. Ed back on the Exchange with us after we talked to him about the hardcover edition 2 years ago. You can join this discussion on the Exchange at 800-838-3760. Maybe you know of apologies well done and not in your life. 800-838-3760. And email address is jx@jeffnet.org. The example you were just giving, and actually it's pretty good because it seems like we learn very young how hard it can be to say "I'm sorry." But you were talking about the kid who skittered a rock past your table outdoors at a restaurant, and his mother said, "Come over and apologize right."
Yeah, we really, it's a difficult thing for a lot of people to do. And you know, I've since I've been looking into the apologies, I think I apologize less, and I try and really sort of think about it before I do it. So I'm not sort of casually apologizing for, you know, not being someplace I'm not supposed to be or something like that. It's what I've noticed is that you know, particularly politicians in particular often have a really hard time apologizing because they don't think they did something wrong. It may be something a staff member did, and they're responsible for it. So they often feel kind of pushed into an apology, and apologies gotten so politicized that many of them resist when they really shouldn't. So that's a sort of different level of difficulty in apologizing. But all of us have a hard time just kind of naming the things we did wrong. And that's one of the things that an apology needs to do. We need to name what we did wrong and say that we're going to be different in the future, that we're going to be a different person. And that's hard.
I was thinking about what you just said, though, about you're trying to apologize less, actually, the more you've been thinking about it. But it makes sense because it is awfully easy, particularly in a long-term relationship with somebody, to say, "Oops, sorry."
Yeah, exactly.
But "oops, sorry" is not the same thing as "I'm sorry" or "I apologize to you for doing this." It is just, it's basically a vocal sneeze, I think, if you just say, "Oops, sorry."
Yeah, exactly. And I looked up the etymology of "my bad" as I was doing this and had a little discussion of that. And that's sort of, you know, old basketball expression. And if you think about it in a sports event, there's not really time for a long, "I'm sorry I messed up that play. I won't let that happen again." So it's a kind of quick acknowledgement of something like that, that's appropriate for that situation. Or if you're in the movies and you maybe step on someone's foot, you might just quickly say, "Oh, I'm sorry," because you don't want to stand there in the during the previews and block everyone's view. But for things that are more things that require more a sort of more thorough recognition of what you did wrong, a longer apology is often good.
A longer apology, why? Because you're giving greater details?
You're giving greater details about what you did wrong, how you feel about it, how you're going to be different in the future. And often in a sort of full-fledged apology, you might ask for forgiveness. So it can be a sort of several-step thing of, you know, naming what you did wrong, saying that what's going to be different, asking for forgiveness, and then the other person has an opportunity to sort of weigh in. And often apologies don't get accepted the first time around, and often people do them poorly the first time around. So I think of it often as a kind of two- or three-step process.
Ed Battistella is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. His book, Sorry About That, The Language of Public Apology, is out in paperback with some new material in it. We were talking about some of the modern traits and apologies. I don't know if you've seen much of the phrase "sorry, not sorry," which seems to get used on social media a lot. Where does that come from, and what does it mean? I've seen it used in different ways.
Yeah, one of the things I noticed last year, the Oxford English Dictionary included the term non-apology in the because they asked me to sort of comment on it at the time, and I think the "sorry, not sorry" is a sort of shorthand for the non-apology, where you apologize so either so casually or in a way that really sort of indicates that you're not sorry. It's almost an insult sometimes when people say, when people try to apologize and really use it to sort of launch into a further insult. And there are some people that are quite expert at this. Michael Moore does it well. Ted Cruz did it well a couple of times in the campaign. So it's a technique used by both sides of the political aisle.
Is it essentially a shorthand in that context, in political context? Because it sounds similar, although much shorter, than the way that you often see political figures apologize, which is, "I'm sorry if anybody was offended by my comments."
Yeah, exactly. I sort of think of that as a kind of verbal jujitsu, where it's, you know, it's your fault if you're offended. You know, "I'm sorry if you're thin-skinned or ignorant enough to misinterpret my words." So yeah, you often find, "I'm sorry if anyone was offended. I'm sorry my comments were misconstrued. You know, I'm sorry this happened. You know, I take full responsibility, even though I wasn't personally involved."
Oh, really?
Those kinds of things, yeah.
Wow. So, yeah, I'll take responsibility for it. I didn't do it, but, you know, yeah. It's onto me. Some of the examples in the original book, James Frey and Oprah Winfrey, that was quite the apology cycle, wasn't it?
That was an interesting, I'm sure many of the listeners recall that James Frey wrote the A Million Little Pieces about his alleged experiences, and it turned out many of them were fabricated. And Oprah defended him at first, and then eventually sort of chewed him out on the air, basically. And he issued a kind of apology like that, that saying that he had fictionalized some things and was sorry if any readers were disappointed. And then a few years later, Oprah had him back on the air and apologized to him for the way she reacted and said that she had thought about it more over time and realized that it was her pride that was causing her to react that way. And they sort of had an awkward on the air moment and then cut to a commercial.
You know, as I look down at the notes about the political ones in particular, though, I'm reminded that this is an age when it seems like people have great difficulty apologizing. So that's one trend. The other one is that a lot more expectation, usually by political opponents, that they do apologize. People are always having to walk back comments because they thought Ruth Bader Ginsburg is a good example.
Yeah, I think the sort of increase of the news cycle has really created a bigger impetus for people to apologize. And it's been politicized in a way as well that particularly if you apologize for something substantive, you're often seen as showing some sort of weakness. The old John Wayne line from She Wore a Yellow Ribbon, never apologize, it's a sign of weakness, gets kind of taken as a political mantra almost that people shouldn't apologize. But actually that's not the way it works in the movie. It's really a movie about responsibility, as anybody who's ever watched it will notice.
Well, when you mention weakness and apologies, I'm reminded of the thundering of Fox News hosts and commentators about President Obama's apology tour early in his presidency, in which he never actually either said, I'm sorry, or I apologize on behalf of, there really was nothing like an apology in any of those. But they saw this as a weak, bowing to foreign powers kind of thing. So that's the apology that really didn't happen, but that people took as apology.
Right. So often sort of, any admission of error or regret is taken as an apology tour by some people. And this goes back actually to Woodrow Wilson in the 1916, there was a treaty with Colombia, and his opponents in Congress accused him of apologizing to a foreign power. And it was basically a little bit of wording that said, we regret that there were any disruptions in our peaceful relations with Colombia over the Panama Canal.
Wow.
it's been politicized for about a century or so. And there's a great moment in one of the Nixon-Kennedy debates in 1960, where they actually talk about whether an apology is a sign of weakness or strength. And they both sort of agreed that it was if the nation does something wrong, it's a sign of strength. And that seems to have gone by the wayside for some.
If the nation has done something wrong, apologizing is a sign of strength.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Wow, it's a hard one to get across, it seems like, in today's world. We're talking to Ed Battistella about his book, Sorry About That, The Language of Public Apology. Ed is a professor at Southern Oregon University. The book has been revised in the newly released paperback edition. You can join us on the exchange with all your comments and questions and maybe your great examples from your own life, or at least things you've seen in the news media. Seems like there have been lots of them this year. Happens a lot in presidential years. Join us on the exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Before we start taking calls, I do want to bring up in particular, so in the case of Obama, there was the apologies that didn't happen, but that commentators said, well, look, it was the apology tour. Apologies that also didn't happen, but that people said did, but because they thought they should have, I guess. Donald Trump's son, I guess, was saying within the last couple of days that he had apologized to the parents of the Marine who appeared at the Democratic Convention. Marine was killed in Iraq. There was actually no apology, and as people watch many of the strange features of this year's presidential election campaign, they notice that Donald Trump is not one to apologize ever.
Yeah, that's an interesting situation. And as I was putting in new apologies, I was trying to guess who the Republican nominee would be, and I'm glad I didn't I'm glad I didn't go with a guess because I would have been wrong. It's interesting to sort of think about why Donald Trump refuses to apologize. And it may be a sort of situation where he realizes maybe he thinks he's not done anything wrong ever. Or it may be one of these sort of calculations where if I apologize for one thing, I'm probably going to have to apologize for a lot more. So the sort of same debate that a nation might have about apologizing.
All right. In the interest of equal time, Hillary Clinton did apologize for using the email server, but did you take note of the specifics of that apology?
That was an interesting one. And she apologized in a couple of ways. Early on, she apologized by saying it was a sort of non-apology where she said, you know, I'm sorry this happened and is causing so much confusion for everyone. So it's that kind of, I'm sorry if you're confused about this issue.
Uh-huh.
And then later on, I think it was last September, she actually came out with a more full-fledged apology saying, you know, I take responsibility. I'm sorry I let this happen, or words to that effect.
I'm sorry that this happened. It sounds like it could easily be translated to, I'm sorry that you found out this has happened.
Yeah, it's – I mean, the best way to apologize for someone is to really kind of go into what their responsibility is. And, you know, you see this in all sorts of apologies where people will kind of, you know, this is my responsibility. I'm sorry it happened. Let's move on kind of apology. That was the approach that Ronald Reagan took with the Iran-Contra scandal and many other politicians. So it's a kind of standard political, I take responsibility. It's not useful to talk about this anymore.
Yeah, well, I want to talk about the future now. Like Mark McGuire before Congress testifying about steroid use or not testifying about steroid use.
Exactly. It's and yeah, I had Alex Rodriguez also for his I want to get back and play ball.
Uh-huh.
So yeah, that's the politicians often want to look forward. But for things that are particularly kind of moral issues, it's important to kind of dig in a little bit and talk about what went wrong. And that would be much harder. The one that I keep thinking about that I didn't include in the paperback, but I thought about a lot was Chris Christie and the bridge.
The George Washington
the
Bridge
George
scandal,
Washington
where they
bridge
closed
scandal
down lanes.
Mm-hmm. And as a New Jersey native, this sort of is a particular interesting one for me. And he sort of apologized in that, you know, I take responsibility, you know, I should have managed my staff better kind of way. So I didn't really do anything. I should have been a better manager. But he could really sort of dig into this a little more. And, you know, he could have talked about the sort of tone he was setting for his staff. And so if there was more soul searching, I'd take some of these apologies a little more seriously.
Ed Battistella, again, our guest on The Exchange. Here is Donna in Ashland. Welcome to The Exchange.
Yes. Isn't it very important to discuss the word forgive as a word with deeper meaning?
Okay. And in what context were you thinking? Just in general?
Using whether you should, I don't like that word, whether the word forgive is really more important and heavy and intense than I apologize. Maybe that's just our usage.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, forgive is a very deep, hard word.
Okay, let's get a response from Ed. Thanks for that, Don. I appreciate it. So,
yeah, I think you're right. And it sort of goes back to this idea that an apology is a process with several steps in it. So, you know, if you do something really sort of egregious to someone you know, it might be the situation where you apologize and say what you did wrong and how you're going to behave differently and then ask for forgiveness. So forgive is kind of the last step in this, and in some ways the most powerful step, because it turns things over to the person who's been harmed. But sometimes you find public figures and people you know, just jumping right to forgive me without saying they're sorry. And then I think that's a sort of abuse of the idea of forgiveness. And the example that I keep thinking of with this one was Jimmy Swaggart, who...
He was a television evangelist.
The television evangelist, cousin of Jerry Lee Lewis, by the way.
Really?
One of the little trivia things I found out researching this, he started out his career as a singer. But when he was caught in a sex scandal, he gave a long, I think, 2,000-word speech to his congregation in which he asked different audiences to forgive him. But he never really said he was sorry.
Really?
He just sort of said, you know, I did, you know, I've sinned, forgive me. But
so there's no real, I mean, by his own terminology, he wasn't really repenting there then, was he?
No, I think he didn't really get around to saying he was sorry. And the next time he was caught in a sex scandal, he just said, you know, God told me it's none of your business.
Really? Okay. I must have missed that part. Jimmy Swaggart so big in Alabama that the TV station in Huntsville, where I lived, ran Jimmy Swaggart instead of the David Letterman show in the early 80s. So, yeah, some memories there. This is the artist's name, I'm sorry, is Boozy Badass, and this is his version of I'm Sorry as we go to the break with Ed Battistella.
Who I'm talking about? I'm talking about my lyric beat. And for my little son, I get joy. Boy, your daddy saw it, but I make it up now that I'm free. The nigga, I apologize. I apologize. Tears in my eye, I'm hurting it.
Sorry for the times that I left you home. I was on the road and you were alone. I'm sorry for the times that I had to go. I'm sorry for the fact that I did not know that you were sitting home just wishing we could go back to when it was just you and me. I'm sorry for the times I would neglect. I'm sorry for the times.
Akon with Sorry, Blame It on Me as we roll into the final segment of today's Jefferson Exchange with Ed Battistella, who's a professor at Southern Oregon University. He teaches linguistics and writing and looks at the language of public apology. That is the subtitle of his book, Sorry About That, which is now out in paperback. We're discussing apologies, good and bad, public and private. And you can join us on the Jefferson Exchange. We'd love to hear stories from your own life about people who've apologized well or not well. 800-838-3760 to join us by phone, by email. It's jx@jeffnet.org. We're talking about the hip-hop coming in and out of this break. Apparently your students had taken an interest in Hamilton because of the Broadway play. Alexander Hamilton himself apparently gave a fairly momentous apology in the early days of the Republic.
It was during the Washington administration, and Hamilton was he had been having an affair with a woman named Maria Reynolds. And her husband was actually aware of the affair and sort of somehow helping things along. And then the husband went to Hamilton and asked for money at some point. So there were actually accusations that Hamilton was using federal dollars to pay this extortion. So he wrote a lengthy apology, something like 2,600 words, in which he confessed to the affair in great detail, but defended himself against the charges of financial impropriety. And George Washington stuck by him, and the rest is history.
Really? So from what you could make out in your research, was it that he was more concerned about the picture of financial impropriety when he was the Treasury Secretary?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That was the sort of part that would have ruined his career, and he said, no, you know, I was involved in this affair. I regret that, but he sort of went into great detail about the affair. It was sort of interesting.
Was that unusual for the time to go into that much detail about hanky panky?
I think so, but he must have felt that this was the only way he could get his side of the story out, was by sort of really confessing one misbehavior in order to build the credibility to defend himself with the other. And there was an early congressional, it was a sort of informal investigative committee that, you know, decided that he had done nothing financially wrong, and Washington kept him on.
Any idea what the general societal response was at that time?
You know, I don't know. There was a lot of sort of pamphleteering. So I imagine it was kind of like what you might find on Facebook and Twitter today. That same the early politics was pretty rough and tumble.
Uh-huh.
The other one that sort of sticks out from that era was the election between
Jefferson and Burr,
and the newspapers at the time were accusing Jefferson of all sorts of crimes. Murder.
Wow.
Just sort of any manner of crimes. And 200 years later, one of the newspapers actually issued an apology to Jefferson. So that's a nice non-apology because Jefferson's not around to weigh in on that. But they were just kind of doing it to show that they were fair-minded.
I remember seeing that. All right. We have some calls on the line here. Let's go to David in Klamath Falls. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Ed Battistella, the author of Sorry About That.
Oh, good morning.
Hi.
So this morning I received an email from a Democratic Party concern asking me to sign a petition to compel Donald Trump to apologize for his negative comments about the Gold Star Khan family.
Mm-hmm.
And I refused to sign it. And my reasoning was that compelling an apology for such an egregious statement really doesn't bring about a true apology or true change of heart in the part of the person who made the comment. And to me, holding Trump accountable for his comments by making sure people don't forget it is more of a pathway to supporting the Khan family than trying to force Donald to apologize for something he's really not sorry for.
Is there any value in apology in that setting, do you think?
Well, I don't think there is, and that's my question. Mm-hmm. Is a compelled apology really meaningful?
All right, let's find out. Thanks for that, David.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think a compelled apology probably isn't meaningful. It's a sort of apology with a gun to your head or something like that. But I think compelling someone to think about what they did can have a kind of value. So if we go back to the example of the Japanese-American internment camps, it was really, you know, a handful of people in Congress. I think it was Alan Simpson of Wyoming I forget the other congressman who sort of started the ball rolling. But it was one of those situations where there were various grassroots groups that were sort of trying to get Congress to think about this again. So compelling people to think about what they did wrong. Daniel Inouye, that's who it was.
Okay, from Hawaii. Sure.
From Hawaii. So compelling people to think about what they did wrong is often a useful thing. But yeah, if you just sort of make them apologize when they don't mean it, that doesn't have much value.
Does it matter who is requesting the apology? Is that important to the dynamics of the situation? Is it stronger, for example, if the petition that David talked about was coming from the Republican Party versus the Democratic National Committee?
Yeah, it's often stronger if it comes from someone who has some standing. So this came from Daniel Inouye, who was Japanese American, and a number of Japanese grassroots, and there was other support in Congress. So it was really a sense that we need to look at this in order to sort of reconcile our society. But I contrast that with a great example from Congress, where a Louisiana congressman apologized to BP Oil for the settlement that the Obama administration arranged for them. He said, you know, I want to apologize for this extortion of this fine company. And then later on, the Republican leadership got so many complaints that he went back on the air at the end of the day and said, you know, I want to apologize for my previous apology and retract it. So that's a nice example of an insincere forced apology. And his earlier one was apparently sincere, but
But notwithstanding, though, as you pointed out. Let's see. We have an email here from Vajra in Sunny Valley who says, I have a real doozy for your guest's pseudo-apology collection. When I first got a dog and walked it down the easement road past our neighbor, who was a minister, by the way, he claimed I had not the right to do so. Then he let his three dogs loose on me and my dog while he and his wife and son filmed the attack. You read this right. Filmed. They stood ready with three cameras. When the video made its way onto YouTube, his church put some heat on him to repent. His online apology in quotes, reads, I am truly sorry and sincerely apologize to any and all who have seen the video or heard about the incident for any and all negativity and problems that have been caused because of my lack of action. Being in the moment, somewhat surprised at what was taking place, and with my eye fixed on the scene unfolding in the small camera's viewfinder, I simply didn't act. Close quote. And then Vajra goes on to say, it's hard to top such disingenuous BS. Thanks for that, Vajra.
Yeah, that's pretty good. I should forward that email to me.
Okay, there you go. Let's send that one to Batticella.
It's really, I mean, often the more words you put into an apology, the more it goes wrong. And one of the examples I like to think of is Donald Sterling, who... went on the, I guess,
owner of the LA Clippers.
Former owner of the LA Clippers.
For now, yeah.
Went on 60 Minutes, was it? I forget, to apologize for his comments and
about keeping black people away from Clippers games.
Exactly, yeah. and the more he spoke, the sort of worse his apology got. So it started out bad, and it just went to absolutely terrible. So the longer he spoke, the more sort of odd excuses he came up with. And it's a sort of similar situation.
Another call here from Echo in Ashland. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Ed Battistella, the author of Sorry About That.
Hi, Ed. So the notion of political correctness, I think, is related to apologizing. People resist these days. They like Donald Trump, for example, because he's not politically correct, or people like Bill Maher because he's not politically correct. So when people resist being politically correct, they're kind of trying to prevent, do a preemptive strike against being asked to apologize for something by ahead of time saying, I shouldn't have to apologize for pretty much anything in the case of Donald Trump. And I think it's particularly likely that people in more powerful categories, social categories, kind of rely on this critique of political correctness because they don't think, as members of more powerful groups, they should have to apologize for what they say or for the impact of what they say on other people.
All right. Thanks for the thoughts. I
just wondered what you thought about that idea.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, the sort of... I don't want to be politically correct dodge is one that really says, you know, civility doesn't matter. And I mean, one of the things that people who use that fail to recognize, I think, is that our attitudes and mores evolve and change. And, you know, I think of people even on a different level who object to slang usage or different sorts of colloquial usage because it's ruining the language, right? And what they're really objecting to is the fact that they have to adjust their listening to figure out what new words mean. And people that object to political correctness are really objecting to the fact that now they have to be polite to people they didn't have to be polite to before or behave differently.
That was where my next question was going to go, is whether people who object to political correctness would prefer to just be ruder or something.
Yeah, exactly. They like the old days when, you know, everyone knew their place.
And you could use certain words on people that you can't use anymore. An email here from Jeffrey in Ashland. He says, I consider I apologize more valuable than I'm sorry, I suppose because I apologize comes from a position of strength, whereas I'm sorry seems to say merely I am weak. You make that distinction, Ed?
I don't make the sort of strength-weakness distinction quite that way, but I think of it in terms of I apologize, you're actually doing something. Right, it's you're performing an action. If you say I'm sorry, you're reporting on a sort of mental state. So, yeah, I could see where you would interpret those as kind of strength versus weakness. I see it as more doing an action versus reporting a state, but it's a similar idea. So yeah, good catch.
So linguistically, they're not exactly equivalent.
No, they're not. I apologize is what's called a performative verb, and you know, I'm sorry is just an adjective reporting a state.
Okay, so I mean, of all the stuff you've seen, I mean, believe me, you've gone through it looks like hundreds of years worth of apologies here, if not thousands. I mean, you have some that go back to Hammurabi or something.
Not quite that far, but the beginning of the Republic, in any case.
Is there a doozy, a really bad apology or a really good apology that rises above the rest?
Well, I mean, one of the people that I thought was sort of unfailingly polite at giving personal apologies was George H.W. Bush. And,
who was also a master of a thank you note, at your point out.
Yeah, and he, there was a great sort of media event where he was talking about the Iran-Contra scandal on the air with Ted Koppel. And your listeners might recall that he had a testy exchange with Dan Rather on the air.
Oh, yeah. Do you want to be remembered for the 18 minutes of silence in Miami? You know, yeah, that kind of stuff.
Exactly. And so he was doing a long-distance interview with Ted Koppel, and he kept calling Ted Koppel Dan because he couldn't see him. And at the end, he apologized in a sort of really, really not, Ted, I'm sorry for calling you Dan. I'm not trying to be a wise guy. I just... And to see the transcript, it looks really funny. But then when you sort of figure out that it was done by long distance video, it makes a little more sense.
I can imagine that. I mean, is there going to have to be another edition of the paperback version of the book? I mean, just based on some of the things that came up in this presidential election year in America?
Yeah, well, I do a sort of regular blog where I'll update things, but I'll wait and see what the publisher is interested in doing.
And so did the hardcover version sell reasonably well?
I think it did. I got a lot of good feedback from folk, and people liked it. So I'm hopeful that this will be successful as well.
All right. Good to see it out in paperback. The book is called Sorry About That, The Language of Public Apology. Ed Battistella teaches linguistics and writing at Southern Oregon University. Good to have you back on The Exchange.
Thanks. It's always a pleasure.